Les colloques du Collège de France.
The ability to mentally manipulate numerical quantity is certainly at the heart of our culture's technological achievements, and as a consequence, a lot of interest has been dedicated to its brain bases. And during the last 25 years, non-invasive brain imaging in humans has consistently revealed a network of frontal and parietal brain regions, now often referred to as the so-called MAF network, whose activity is elevated during simple numerical tasks such as numerical comparison or even just observing changes in numbers, as well as elementary arithmetic, but even during higher level numerical mathematical reasoning as opposed to non-MAF controls. But even for relatively simple calculation tasks, it is not trivial to disentangle which precise aspects are driving activity in a given region and what information these regions internally encode. And an influential idea put forward earlier by Stan was that intraparietal regions encode numerical magnitude. And of course, this fits very well with these Andreas Nieder's findings from macaque monkeys, where he's found that similarly located and possibly functional homologous regions of the intraparietal cortex contain neurons which fire selectively to a specific numerical quantity, such as preferring one number of dots over the other. And my interest in for a long time has now been in the question of how can we actually achieve or move towards a similarly fine-grained understanding of representations which is sensitive to differences between individual numbers with non-invasive methods in humans. And given that these neurons appear intermingled within small brain regions, if their layout would be completely random, then our chances to detect preferences for individual numbers at the resolution of fMRI would be very low at least. But fortunately, other examples from general sensory processing, for example, show us that functional brain responses have intermediate structures between the one of brain regions and individual neurons. For example, in early visual cortex, responses are organized according to spatial location, stimulus orientation, and other properties. And a long time ago now, when I joined Stan's lab, together also with Andreas Kleinschmidt, we thought that if something at least vaguely similarly would also hold in higher level parietal regions, then we might be able to detect differences in between individual numbers, not necessarily based on individual voxels, but at least based on the pattern across multiple voxels. And indeed, we found that when we applied pattern recognition methods to direct evoked activity, it was possible to distinguish based on intraparietal activity patterns in similar regions as those that show number selective neurons in monkeys, which was the numerosity a subject was perceiving or holding in mind without further task-related differences between those conditions. And a little bit later, others have focused on more directly trying to reveal what are the response layout that could underlie such discrimination. And this has led to the discovery of several such numerosity maps within which the preferences of individual voxels are roughly organized according to a gradient from small to large. Now, a number of follow-up studies using both approaches have better characterized these representations and their relevance for behavioral discrimination and so on. And one aspect that also now has become clear is that such information in activation patterns about numerosity, which cannot be attributed to other non-numerical properties of those sets like area, size, or density and so on, it is not actually, it is quite widespread across the visual system, not only found in dorsal visual pathways, but also in the ventral vision pathways that we more commonly associate with object recognition. And this might suggest that this information is basically arising in a more or less automatic fashion from the sensory computations that are performed by the visual hierarchy. And in addition, this information is found in both retinotopic areas and higher level association areas with slightly different properties. So many studies by now have investigated numerosity representations during perceptual tasks, yielding insights into how quantity information emerges from sensory processing. But of course, numbers are not mere perceived objects. They are entities that we transform internally during mental calculations, which generate new numbers as outputs. And contrary to what this image might suggest, this is not limited to precise symbolic arithmetic, but approximate computations over sets of objects is something that is found in cultures without widespread symbol use and is also found early on during development. So where and how does the brain generate numerical quantities during internal computations, and to what extent would their representations be shared with stimulus-evoked ones? This is something that is hard to study in animals because due of task complexity, but it's actually hard to study in humans as well because we would at the same time need methods that have both high spatial and high temporal resolution to be able to distinguish the different components of a calculation task, the input, the operation, and the outputs, and so on. So, when we approached this with 7 Tesla fMRI, we used an approximate calculation task where subjects were presented with a sample number that they had to apply in an operation to and then remember their output and later compare it to a probe numerosity. And the trick that we used to somehow better distinguish the representation of the internally generated result from the other components of the task, in spite of the sluggish nature of the fMRI response, was to introduce this long delay period within which subjects had to internally maintain their result. And overall, we had 10 conditions where subjects performed multiplication or division by 2 or 4, which yielded outputs in the same range as the input numbers. And now, what we can do in such a paradigm is to analyze fMRI activity in a slightly more time-resolved fashion than this would be usually done. So we can see, in terms of overall activation, activity rises in frontal parietal areas towards the middle of the delay period, to then decay a little bit again, to finally rise again strongly when the subjects are actually doing their comparison with the probe number. So this is a nice visual illustration, and it shows us that our subjects' brains were actually doing something. But at the end, it still doesn't have the desired precision about which information is encoded at what time point, and information about sample number, operation, result, and so on. And it was a pattern analysis that allowed us to get at that later aspect. So on the one hand, we have the similarity of brain activity patterns between our 10 experimental conditions. And on the other hand, we have the similarity of those same conditions in terms of sample number, operation, operand, and result number. And performing multiple regression on activity patterns with these predictor matrices, this gave us weights which reflected where and when in different samples, result numbers, and so on, were distinguished in activity patterns irrespective of what the other predictors could explain. And for local activity patterns within a small searchlight radius, we found that, as expected, the sample numbers could be distinguished in middle parts of the delay period in the dorsal visual stream, but not limited to that, also to some extent in ventral in the earlier areas and in frontal cortex. And during later parts of the delay, when the activity for the sample had returned a bit more to baseline again, we managed to see a representation of the operand in a left prefrontal regions, which could correspond to Broca's area. And finally, we also managed to see a representation of result numbers in slightly different prefrontal regions and also in the angular gyrus. And doing complementary analysis now, not at very local activity patterns, but at the level of functional anatomical subregions of parietal cortex, we did confirm the result for the regions in the angular gyrus, but we also observed that a few other regions in the IPS did also distinguish between result numerosities, and these were actually the first ones to do so, notably this region here, which is the so-called medial intraparietal area. So overall, these analyses have shown us that we can detect a correlate of both results and sample numbers in distributed activity patterns independently of the others and other task-related components of the calculation. But these results do not yet tell us to what extent sample and result numbers would have aligned representations in a shared representational space. And it is decoding analysis with cross-decoding between the sample and result numbers and between time periods where we expect those representations to be maximized that allows us to get at that latter aspect. And of particular interest in this case is this time period or the generalization between early mid-delay activity for sample numbers and late delay period activity for result numbers before the actually match number appears on the screen and vice versa. And the results for that were a little bit disappointing because although we had a tendency for such a generalization in the MIP region, it did actually not survive multiple comparison correction. But interestingly, activity in this region and only in this region did significantly predict behavioral precision of subjects in the task of comparing their internally generated result with the following probe number. And this is interesting because it suggests that this generalization was actually successful to the extent that subjects were actually managing to generate the correct result number. And in the end, it confirms the idea that this region has representations which are aligned between results and samples and results. So what is the nature of the regions where we found internally generated results to be encoded? There are two kinds. The first one on the medial IPS, and these are sensory motor integration regions which are known to be visually, have visual topography organization. MIP corresponds to the medial interparietal area in macaques, which is reached in planning of reaching, is involved in planning of reaching movements. And the atlas we used is taking over this nomenclature from macaque studies, but we have to take this with a grain of salt because the actually functional correspondence between these regions, between monkeys and humans, is a matter of further ongoing research. But we can be fairly confident that these are sensory motor and integration regions for which the effect is either the hand or the eye. On the other hand, an angular gyrus is a very different type of region, which is considered a high-level convergence zone with absent or weak topographic organization. It is supposed to have the greatest distance from sensory input regions and is part of the so-called default mode network, which is one of the regions that has most highly expanded in humans as compared to monkeys. The angular gyrus is not actually a typical part of the classical MAF networks as we see it with fMRI, probably because it belongs to the default mode network and therefore doesn't have strong task evoked activity. But it is noteworthy that the angular gyrus has long been a region that has been found in neuropsychology to be associated with acalculia when lesioned. And our results allow us to refine this functional role for this region as being involved in generating or maintaining internally generated numbers. And this also reminds us that if we only focus on overall activity to understand a region's functional role, then we might miss the central characteristics about that role, the role of that region in cognitive representations. So in sum, with ultra-high-field fMRI, we isolated a first correlate of purely internally generated quantity representations, which, contrary to stimulus-evoked ones, were most prominent in higher-level regions at the top of the sensory processing hierarchy. And these results link with classical neuropsychological findings and refine the functional role of the angular gyrus in calculation. We also managed to show that shared representations between stimulus evoked and internally generated quantities exist, notably in superior medial subparts of the intraparietal sulcus, which is known to be involved in sensory motor integration. And these regions might be candidates for the initial generation of the result numbers. Of course, this first study is leaving many aspects to be revealed. For example, what is the role of numerical format, the possible role of cortical layers in representing stimulus evoked versus top-down generated quantity information, and also the temporal characteristics with which these representations unfold. And I thank you very much for your attention and my collaborators in this talk.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-2-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.